My loves, my family, hey, it's your girl E, and this is the season 2 finale of The Call, where we've spent the past several weeks hearing from inspiring and interesting women about their journey to answer their life's calling.
I don't expect folks to come from outside of our community and elevate our stories. I don't expect them to come from outside our community and center us, but we have to center us.
So I'm not going to sit here and tell you how hard it is to integrate schools and how complicated it is. I'm going to tell you this is why it needs to get done.
If we can fall down and figure out, like, how do we reach out and hold on to each other inside of this, I think that's when we begin to see survival.
I think that we have to stop looking at our bodies as an accident waiting to happen.
This isn't a race, and there's no finish line, there's no graduation, there's no ceremony. We're talking about spiritual warfare.
I have had people debate the political feasibility of my own human right in front of me.
This discipline should be available. It should be something we know how to talk about.
If I do this, do you see yourself now? Or if I ask you this, does that wake you up now?
You sometimes need to be louder or quieter or acceptable or not acceptable. And I think you just have to be you, you know, but I don't think that that's something that you ever forget.
I definitely am in a Boys to Men mood right now. I'm not sure if it's like a it's so hard to say goodbye moment or an end of the road moment, but I'm definitely feeling emotional. I'm feeling emotional to end this season. I'm probably not supposed to tell you the truth, but the truth is this was a hard season to get through, y'all. I know as a host and a creator, I'm supposed to act like everything is easy and magical and not let you see how the sausage is made. But I mean, that wouldn't be me. That wouldn't be real. That wouldn't be the purpose of the show. The purpose of the show is to show you what it looks like to answer your call. And I'm out here living my call. And this show is a part of that. And it was just a lot this season. I was busy. If you follow me on Instagram at Miss E Will, you'll see a big announcement I made there about a change in my professional life that I'm super excited about, but definitely threw my plans off a little bit. What else happened? We changed producers mid-season. We had some amazing guests who were super excited after hearing the show the first season. Like, we had a lot of success and people listened to it and said, I want to be on the show. But then the booking drama and scheduling drama, it was just a lot. I was interviewing people at like 10 p.m. on Sunday evenings and 8 a.m. on Saturday mornings. But I'm not complaining because that's the work. That's hard work. And if you really think about it, that's one of the themes of this show. One of the constant lessons that stay the same from all the guests and from all their lives is that no matter what your calling is or no matter how it comes to you, you're going to have to do the work. If you want to change your life or if you want to change the world, you can't get around it. And this week's guest is a perfect example of that. Angela Yee is kind of a legend in the radio game. She's the only female co-host of the number one rated morning show in radio, The Breakfast Club, on New York's Power 105.1 and on Diddy's Revolt TV. I personally watch all of their shows on YouTube. But there and on her own radio show, Lip Service, she interviews some of the biggest, hottest stars in hip hop. And over the past decade has risen to being one of the most powerful, recognizable female hosts in radio. In addition to that, she's also managed major artists like Jay Electronica. And she owns a juice bar. And I mean, I don't know how she has time for all that stuff. But in our conversation, we talk about how she got to this level of success. And she talks about it all, the internships, the bad bosses, the low pay, the negotiation, the sexism, not just that she experienced in the past, but frankly, the sexism that she still experiences today. And she talks about all of it with such a matter of factness, which I thought was really, really interesting. There may be some stuff while you're listening that you have to Google if you don't listen to The Breakfast Club, because we talk about some of her iconic moments on the show, like interviews with Ray J and Gucci Mane. But the lessons that she shares are universal. You got to work hard to get where you want to go. So I thought that was the perfect conversation to leave you with for this season, to remind you and myself that 2018 is going to be great. We're going to reach for our goals. We're going to live our best lives, all that good stuff. But in order to do that, we're going to have to put in the work. So sit back and enjoy this really fun interview with Brooklyn's own, the queen of urban radio. I hate that word, urban. The queen of radio, right? Okay. Angela Yee. Angela, thank you so much for being on the call.
Well, thank you, Erica.
I was super excited to talk to you because I'm an interview nerd and you are an interviewer. So it's always fun to talk to somebody who does this as part of their living.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So thanks for chatting with me. The other reason I was really excited to talk to you, not just because I'm a fan and I love The Breakfast Club and Lip Service and all of your work, but is because, you know, right now we're in this moment when there's so much conversation about gender and feminism and sexism and all of that stuff in the entertainment industry. And when I think about your career, I'm like, actually, Angela's kind of been at the center of a lot of that. Not your name, right? Not your personal experiences, but just like as a woman in the industry, kind of one of the leading voices in a male-dominated industry, I'm sure you have a lot of lessons that you could share with me and with all of our listeners. So I was really excited to chat with you today about all of that good stuff.
Yeah, I was just talking about that yesterday, how I actually was around for like a lot of different things in my whole journey. We were having a whole discussion. I was with one of my friends. She's a writer. Mm-hmm. And we both met each other really early on. Like, actually, I was working for Wu-Tang. I had just graduated from college and she was at NYU. And I interviewed her because she wanted to come intern. And we still know each other now. So we were just kind of talking about all the things that we went through. And that's one of the things I think is so important is having real friends, like women who are your friends that you can talk to about everything, because it's a lot more difficult when you have to go through things yourself and you don't have anybody that you can bounce things off of or get advice from, and really people who care about you and want to see you succeed, because there's people who are like pretending to be your friends, mm-hmm. but they're really kind of jealous of you. So it's just important to differentiate between people who you're acquaintances with and people who are genuine that you can call up and tell them anything and know that it's not going anywhere.
Right, right. So what does it mean in this moment then when a lot of these stories are now being made public, right? So there's always been, hopefully you have your tribe, your people that you can share these stories with that you can trust, because again, you can't trust everyone with that information. But now we're in a moment when it seems like, you know, everyone is being encouraged to share their stories publicly for the greater good. What do you think about that?
I think that's great. I think the culture of what it is that we do in this entertainment business, and I'm sure in a lot of other fields as well, that men have been getting away with a lot of things forever, since the beginning of time. And just writing it off as, well, that's just what happens in the workplace. There's a lot of things that I witnessed, a lot of things I've experienced that it's kind of like, well, you just have to deal with it because that's part of what comes with the job. Even when I started doing radio, I remember they told me, listen, you can't get overly sensitive about anything. You have to have tough skin. You have to just be able to deal with certain things and know that's part of what the job is.
Are there any things that you dealt with or kind of pushed to the side that now, kind of in this climate, knowing what you know now, you might say, you know what, if that same thing happened to me or if I witnessed that same thing now, I might react differently?
Yeah, and I was telling this story on a panel at A3C, and this was kind of before everything started unfolding. But I was talking about a time when I had a job working at a record label. And my boss called me in one day and he was like, listen, I need to talk to you. And so I had like my pen and a pad of paper, like, okay, let me get ready to take some notes. And he was like, I think you should sleep with me. And I was just like, what? And he said, I think it would be great. We could go to nice dinners. You know, you make good money. Nobody has to know. It'll just be between us. And I was so disgusted. And I was like, I would never do that if you were the last person on earth. It was my reaction. And I didn't even consider it. And then I ended up getting fired. He didn't come back to the office after that again. While I was there, I got fired 2 days after that. And so that was an experience that I had. And when it first happened, I remember telling my best friend, and she had an artist that she was working with that she was writing for that just signed a development deal there. And she was like, well, you know, we do have her doing this development deal and maybe we should just wait and see. And, you know, so I was kind of, it was, you know, awful to me. I didn't really know how to deal with it. And I was young. And I was also thinking, because I think I was only like 22 or 23 when it happened. And I remember thinking, man, if I say something, what if I never get a job again?
Right.
This might be it for me. I could get blackballed and I'm just starting out in my career. So I was not like, I just, you know, I actually found another job the same day that I got fired. So that was good because I hated that job anyway. But, you know, I do feel like maybe I should have spoken out. But I don't even know if in the climate during that time period, it would have really mattered.
Right. A, it might not have mattered, and B, you're right about what the consequences for you might have been.
And you know what's interesting? Somebody texted me the other day, and she was a woman that had hit me up. I do my Ask Yee stuff, and people email me questions. And she had like a dire situation when she hit me. She was telling me that her boyfriend was abusive, and she sent me pictures, and her face was like all swollen and black and blue. And I told her, she has a kid. I was like, you got to move. Like, you got to get out of there. You have to get a restraining order. And she actually really did it.
Wow.
And so I just kept in touch with her, and she just texted me when we were having a conversation on the radio about everything. And she said, I was at work and my boss did some really inappropriate things to me, and he grabbed me, and I was nervous to say anything. I thought I would get fired, but I told human resources and they fired him, and I was so happy that I said something.
So that's like a perfect example of how the moment, you know, is maybe actually leading to lasting change. I was concerned initially because I'm like, you know how, you know, pop culture in general, social media, people's attention spans are so short that like, oh, we're going to have all this conversation and all these names being thrown around. But is there an actual impact in the workplace? But that sounds like it may be starting to happen.
Right. And I mean, I think that it also is not just going to impact the workplace, but also just the way that men talk to women in general, mm-hmm. knowing that there's consequences, that you can't just say anything or do anything. And now you have to think twice, because before, even in music and movies and real life, things are just kind of supposed to be brushed off, taken as a joke. People do things even when you're younger. Like, you know, I remember being on a school bus and you walk trying to get off the bus and guys are like grabbing your ass while you're trying to get off the bus. And that's uh-huh. a young age that kids do things like that. And it's important for people to know from a young age, from their parents at school, from teachers, whoever's on the bus, that you can't touch other people at all, period.
Right. And I think there's what happens when you're at a young age, whether that be a child or like you were telling your first story early on in your career. But I think what this moment has also brought to light for those who weren't aware is that that stuff happens, though, no matter where you are in your career, no matter kind of the way we talk about race. It's like it doesn't matter how wealthy you are or where you live, that at some point you're going to be reminded of your color, your race in this country. And I think the same is true around gender. And I pay attention a lot to your interviews and to Breakfast Club, like I always. And when I'm sitting and watching on YouTube with my husband, and I'm like, wait a minute, is he looking at Angela Yee when he's asking her a question, or is his back turned? Like, I peep little subtle stuff that's like a level of respect that you have absolutely earned as a woman in the industry, but because it's such a male-dominated industry, you can still see little slights, little things that I'm like, that seems pretty sexist. Do you feel those things, or am I just reading too much into things?
Yeah, I mean, I even feel it with, you know, things that happen in general. Like, if I ask a question or I say something, but if Charlamagne or Envy says it, people take it differently.
Girl, okay. When I tell you, I like stop the interview and I pay attention to stuff like that because it happens so often. And I think now, shout out to Charlamagne, no shade to him. He's, you know, very successful, got the book, doing great, amazing stuff. But I think there's this, because there's such kind of, you know, a public conversation around him and his work right now, that what you see is that when some male guests, not all, and I wouldn't even say the majority, at least not from a viewer perspective, but some, you'll see this type of attention and respect paid when actually, if you pay attention to the types of questions that the three of you ask, you are the one that actually asks the questions usually about the artist's work. Right?
Well, yeah, I do probably the most research.
Yep.
Like, I'm the person that, well, if we're interviewing somebody that's on a reality show, I'll go, even if I've never seen it before, and watch as many episodes as I can.
Yep.
Or if somebody's doing a movie, I'll go to the screening and see the movie. Because I do feel like when we have people come on the show, it's a level of respect that you give to the guests,
right,
that you actually pay attention, instead of when they come in saying, well, I don't watch the show anyway. And then it's like, well, what's the point of doing an interview if you haven't even bothered to pay attention to what this person's doing, you know?
Yeah. And so when I see that, I think about, you know, how women are often working harder or putting in, and again, I'm not talking about your two co-hosts specifically, but just in general in this culture, right, that women tend to put in that level of work or that type of work, and it's not often appreciated. So first of all, I want you to know that it's noticed, and that those of us who are watching and are fans of the show and are fans of all of your work really, really appreciate the level of care that you put into your job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, another thing that I noticed, too, is, like I said, if we ask, we could ask the same thing. But if Charlamagne asks it or Envy asks, because they're men, they're like, OK, that's cool. But if I ask, like, even a woman, if I say something, people be like, oh, she's hating. And it's like, no, if you want to ask a question and something happened and you ask a question, that's not hating on somebody.
Right.
You know, and I do feel like sometimes with women guests, I have to be really cautious in asking questions or saying things because people will attack you if you're asking a question sometimes when you're really just doing your job. Like,
right.
There's no reason why I should do my job differently than how they do their job.
Right, right.
Just because I'm a woman.
And that brings me to another conversation that I think is really, really important right now, which is about pay equity. And I saw that you shared a story. I don't even remember when you shared the story initially, but just about your transition when you were first offered a job at Hot 97 before you came over to the Breakfast Club. Share that story a little bit about kind of how that happened and why you ultimately chose Breakfast Club.
Right. And so when I first started at Sirius, I had no radio experience. And shout out to Paul Rosenberg, Eminem's manager, because he really gave me the opportunity to go and do that. I had worked for him before, and he always has been really helpful in my career. And so when I told him I wanted to do marketing at Sirius, he suggested that I try to do the morning show. They were looking for a female sidekick. And that's fine because guess what? I never did radio. There's no way I thought I would step into a position. I wasn't even considering being on the air.
Wait, that's how you started? It wasn't like you didn't come in and say, I really want to host a show or I really want to be on air?
No.
Wow.
Okay. Not at all. I never even thought about that. I was always a real behind the scenes person. And I think, you know, having that background in marketing has always been really beneficial for me as far as being able to do a lot with a little because we had no budget for anything. Mm-hmm. So I was the one that was always online. I had an intern like videotaping my interviews with this old rickety camera that I had. And then I would put it up like 3 weeks later when they finally, you know, got me the video back. But I was doing a lot of different things just on my own to promote myself. But when I was working, I ended up getting a job because it was like a probationary period of me being on the morning show, having never done radio, being a sidekick and trying to get into a groove. And it was a lot of work. Like I would go home, listen to my show every single day, listen to how bad it sounds. Because no matter what anybody tells you, doing radio when you first start is not easy. Yeah. It looks easy. And everyone thinks they could do it because they think all you do is sit there and talk, but they don't know all the preparation that goes into it. They have to understand the rhythm, how you have to speak. It's just completely different. So I was learning all that, but I didn't have anybody teaching me. I was just teaching myself. And that's how I started doing radio. And so Cypher Sounds, his intention was never really to stay at Shade 45 on Sirius. He really wanted to do the morning show at Hot 97. So he would always tell me, when that opportunity comes, I'm out. So I was like, all right, you know, I respect it. It was never a secret. And so when he did get the opportunity to go, he actually said he wanted me to come with him. So when they offered me a position there, and I'll tell you, before they even interviewed me, they told the whole staff at Hot 97 that I was coming there to work. I hadn't even spoken to them yet. And it got back to my job also because they assumed it's Hot 97, there's no way she's going to turn it down.
Wow.
So when I went and had the meeting finally, my job had already at Sirius was like, oh, we heard you're going to Hot 97. And I was like, well, I haven't heard about it. I haven't even spoken to anybody there. So that's news to me. And then they did call me. I went to go meet with Ebro. And, you know, basically he offered me the job. But I asked him, I said, well, would I also have my name on the show? Because it was Cypher Sounds and Peter Rosenberg. And he was like, no. And I said, okay, so what would my position be? He was like, well, you would just be doing the traffic, the weather. And I felt like I'm from New York. And right. At that point, more people knew me than Peter Rosenberg, you know. And so I just couldn't understand why they didn't think it could be Cypher Sounds, Peter Rosenberg, and Angela Yee. Or just throw my name in there, too. I would deserve right. it. I had proven myself. You wanted me to come. And then he offered me $50,000. And I was like, okay, number one, I make more than that now, and I already feel like that's not enough.
Right.
And my name's not on the show. It doesn't sound like a good idea. So he gave me 24 hours to think about it because he wanted me to accept it on the spot. And I was like, And I do feel like not having a background in radio is the reason why I didn't accept it on the spot, because a lot of kids from New York grew up wanting to be on Hot 97. Like, that's the end-all, be-all as far as radio, it used to be. And for me, it was just like, that doesn't sound like a good business deal.
Oh, okay. So I thought maybe not having a background would have made you more excited about it, but you're saying actually it's why you kind of weren't tripping when you got an offer that you knew didn't sound good.
That is why, and I think that's also why people liked me at Sirius at first, because Sirius is not conventional. And so they did tell me that a lot of people, they had auditioned for the spot that I got, were so trained in radio already that they thought they knew everything. This is how I do it. This is how it's done. So for them, it was kind of nice to have like a clean slate to kind of, you know, just throw me in there. And I wasn't very conventional at all. I didn't have any training. So that kind of worked for them.
Yeah, that's a really good lesson too, like embracing what you don't know and having that work for you.
Yeah, because sometimes that can be a benefit. You know, sometimes I do feel like when we do something in life, we're so trained on doing the same thing that worked for us before over and over again. Mm-hmm. And you do have to approach things differently as we get into different technologies and just seeing how different things can work. And I think that was in like that 33 Strategies of War book, that you can't just keep on doing the same thing just because those results worked for you before. Mm-hmm. You actually have to try different approaches each time you do something. So you can't just give in the same marketing plan for every brand. You got to think about what each situation is and approach it differently. And I feel the same way about interviews. Mm-hmm. You know, you approach different people differently. You don't just ask the same questions to every person.
Right, right. So you have this experience, you know, you just decide that offer is not good enough. You move over to Breakfast Club. You have, you know, this wild
success.
Well,
no, actually, after that, I ended up, they gave me my own show at Sirius. So instead of me being the sidekick, I had the morning show. Yeah. And so it was my morning show. It was called The Morning After with Angela Yee.
Your laugh. And that was such a naughty laugh, too.
Yeah, it was because it was funny. I came up with that name just because I thought it was funny, like for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, and that it was interesting because I was the only woman on the whole station at the time. They didn't have any other women when I first started on Shade 45. It was such a male station because it was all hip hop. Mm-hmm. And most of the audience, because it was all hip hop, was male. And at that time, it was a lot of truck drivers that had Sirius because a lot of people, they had it in their trucks because they went from, you know, this was before internet radio and streaming and all of that. It was pretty groundbreaking for me then because they didn't think that guys would want to listen to a woman on the radio also. Mm-hmm. Or listen to a woman talk about hip hop. But it turned out that they were wrong. And I also ended up getting my own nighttime show. That's how Lip Service started.
Got it. So at every step of the way, even though this wasn't even your initial intention or your initial goal, you're kind of proving people wrong by doing something and succeeding at it and kind of blowing expectations out of the water.
Yeah, and it was a lot of work. Like, it was a lot of me having to critique myself, listen to other people. A lot of people can't take criticism. And I do feel like if you can sit me down and tell me what you think can be done better and help me, I'm definitely open. I'm not open to people on, you know, social media just trying to go in on you for no reason. But I am open to people who I know and respect telling me, okay, this is what I think. You know what? You could do this better. It is important for us to do that because you can always improve no matter what it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. So before all of this then, because I think I missed the piece that you didn't, even when I was researching, I don't think I remembered or even saw that you didn't really kind of set out to do radio, but I did know that you majored in English and wanted to be a writer. So tell me about how that came about. You're a little girl growing up in Flatbush, right?
Mm-hmm. My mom used to take me to the library all the time, and I used to read books. I read so many books growing up, and I used to love those young teen novels. Even when I was too young for that, I remember reading like Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, and I couldn't wait to get my period. I remember reading Deanie and learning about scoliosis.
Oh my gosh.
From reading that book. And I remember reading every Beverly Cleary, Judy Blume, all of those books growing up. Yeah. Sweet Valley High, I used to love those.
Yes.
You know, so ever since I was in kindergarten, I always was, like, I learned how to write even before I was in school. I started kindergarten when I was 4. And I always was just really big into reading and writing. I remember just being mad at my parents, and I would write like a little story about them and how they weren't my real parents. Like, I would do stuff like that, but it was very therapeutic. I remember I wrote a whole story about like my parents turning into balloons and me getting to choose. Because I was mad at them for something they wouldn't let me do, but I would just do stuff like that. And so I always knew I was going to be a writer at some point in life. Mm-hmm. And I do still write all the time. When I was in college, like, I did screenwriting, I wrote plays, I did all of that, I read Shakespeare, and I do want to write my own books at some point, and I've been working on that. But the thing is that I always wanted to write it myself. Like, I didn't really want to have somebody else write it for me, just because that is what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
Like, I want to be a writer. And I know a lot of people get their books and they have like co-writers and ghostwriters. And that's great, because I think that's a lot easier.
Let me tell you something. I just turned in the draft of my first book, and I also didn't want a ghostwriter or anything.
Yes.
The amount, but when you're doing so much else, right? Like, when you have jobs, not just one, but multiple jobs, it's really also hard to clear your mind and make the mental space to do that kind of writing. So it takes a long time.
And then don't you like go back and read it and then it seems whack after you did it? And then,
oh my gosh. Like, yes, I literally would write chapters and like put them out. I'm like, okay, good, I'm done. And then I would go back and read them and throw them all out. Cause I was like, that's awful.
And be like, this is terrible. That's what I do too.
yep. But it's worth it. It's worth it. I can't wait to read your book. But
okay, I'm excited. So I can't wait to read yours now that the first draft is done.
Okay, so then you decide that since you know this is what you want to do, you do writing all through college. And then what do you do when you come out?
The first thing I did, this is terrible, is I got a job as a temp. In my head, I had this romantic vision that I would have a regular job, you know, making whatever money, get my own place, and be able to write and do photography.
Yeah, it sounds like a movie.
Yeah, and guess what? After 3 days temping, I left. I hated it so much. It was awful.
Three days?
I was like, okay. Yeah, 3 days. You know, temp agencies, they'll send you on like an assignment and it's nothing like what's described.
Right.
It was like, oh, you'll be doing, I forget what the description was, but what I was really doing was opening envelopes all day.
Yeah,
it was. No. And everybody in there looked so depressed and it was just awful. And it just was terrible for my spirit.
Aww,
I was like, I can't do this. And I actually left and I went to go visit the Wu-Tang office. I had interned there before and I was like, let me just stop by there. And I stopped by and I walked in and Divine, who was RZA's brother, was like, oh my God, we were talking about you. I've been trying to find you. I want to hire you to come work here and be my assistant. So I got a job, right?
Wow.
Right away.
See, when did you intern with Wu-Tang?
When I was in college. I did a lot of internships. I interned at MTV. I interned at a record label called TVT. I interned for Wu-Tang.
And then that got you a great job.
Mm-hmm. And then I ended up just stopping by. It was the same day they were going to do Summer Jam and they got banned from the radio. I didn't even realize it was Summer Jam. I just stopped by the office and it was like a frenzy. They were like, come with us to Summer Jam. And then I just ended up getting, and you know what? I had a job offer there and I had interviewed at Columbia Records also. And they actually called me up to offer me something. And my best friend was working at Sony at the time. And she was like, go work for Wu-Tang. She said, if you work here, and this was the advice she gave me. She was like, she was an assistant in the A&R department. And she said, when you work here, everybody's really nervous that you want their job. So you're going to be someone's assistant, but they're not going to really teach you anything. They'll really just have you answering phones and scheduling meetings, and they don't want you to learn too much. I think you should go work there because they're going to let you do everything you want to do.
Wow.
And it was true because I did go work there, and because it was like a small business and it was really family, like everybody's family members worked there. They let me do everything. Like I was like running that office because they were never really around and I was the person, he really trusted me to make decisions and handle things, mm-hmm. you know, so it was a good decision for me.
What was it that attracted you then and even now to the entertainment industry, to the music industry in particular?
I think that it all kind of just happened. Like, I mean, I grew up in Brooklyn, and so I ended up knowing a lot of people. Like, I went to school with Lauryn Hill, and I went to college with Santi Gold. You know, she was my best friend. She still is. And I just randomly knew a lot of people, and Santi was the one that got me the internship at MTV. She was like, my boy needs an intern. His name was Fred Jordan. And she said, I recommended you. And then when I went to go work at Wu-Tang, my other friend, I used to book shows in college. Me and Santi, we used to book artists to come perform and mm-hmm. make some money off of it. So we kind of were like promoters in a way. And so when I graduated, she went to go work at Sony. And I also got an opportunity to intern for Wu-Tang from one of my friends that I met. He was actually best friends with my ex-boyfriend. They went to Howard. And he was like, oh, you know, my boy's looking for it. Like, it was always just people recommending me for stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then I would just go and get it and do it. And I it wasn't something that I consciously did. It kind of feels like something that just happened to me. I was always like, we would leave school and go to the tunnel and go to all the clubs. And even to this day, like, I still know people that I met from back then that I still keep in contact with.
we talk about on the show a lot about a calling. And what I've noticed in interviewing folks is, like, they'll be, I'd say half the group feels like, oh my goodness, I had this call. Like, I knew that there was this thing I was supposed to do, and so I pursued it. But then there's a lot of people who it just kind of happened. And that also was its own version of a calling, because it wasn't even intentional. It's like the next thing you know, you were working very hard, but these opportunities kept coming, or relationships would pan out. And that's another way of having a calling, which is like just kind of following, I mean, I hate to say it, but like the flow, like what opportunities are in front of you and always seizing them.
Yeah, and that was more what I was doing. I know, like, I got into situations that people would love to be in. People would love to get certain opportunities that I had, and they kind of were just given to me. But I will say that every opportunity I had, if it was paid or not paid, I always worked so hard. I remember working, interning over the summer at this record label, and my boss was terrible. And I remember him telling me, because I would be like the first intern there. It was a bunch of interns, and I was always there first, and I would always be the last one to leave. And by the end of the summer, I was the only one left. Like, all the interns just kind of like fell off. And he was like, you know, it's amazing that you come in here every single day and you're very pleasant and you're always upbeat and you're in a really good mood no matter what it is that I ask you to do. And he was like, how do you do? He asked me, he was like, how do you do that? And even though I didn't even really like him, he didn't know that. But it's so important early on for you, no matter what. Like, if you're interning, you never know who's really watching you, what opportunities might come out of that. Even if you don't like the person that you're working for, there's people in other departments that work there. And I would always float around and go to the other departments and see if they need help, you know, doing anything else. And I always make myself available. I think our best interns we've had are people that have extended themselves and offered to do things outside of their normal responsibilities. Don't just be the intern that goes to get the food and then comes back and sits around and waits to be told what to do. Be really proactive.
What's something you wish someone had told you, or that you wish you'd learned? I think a lot of times people see very successful individuals and assume that it means they have always made the perfect decisions and made no mistakes, when I think the truth is it means we actually learn from our mistakes quickly. So what's something you wish you'd known, or a mistake that you made that in hindsight you're like, okay, here's a lesson I took from that?
There's a couple of things. One thing I wish I would have learned was to invest some money when I had it. Like, when I was younger, there were periods of time when I was working and I was freelancing, and I would get like a big chunk of money at a time. And when I was younger, like, for me, at one point I had like $30,000 in cash that I could have just bought something with, instead of like renting a house. You could have easily back then been able to invest in something, buy something, put some money down. It's so different now. Yeah. I wish somebody would have taught me that, because that's something that I know people, like my ex-boyfriend, his dad's a banker. He owns his place in Brooklyn, and he got it so long ago when it was dirt cheap, and it's right by the Barclays. And that's because the way that he was raised was like, you have to own something. And I never thought about things like that. So I do wish I would have had better financial advice when I was younger, because I definitely was just blowing through some money doing, I don't even know, doing what. Yeah. So I think that's a really important thing to learn, because I've been learning it now, and I wish it was something that I would have been up on when I was a lot younger. Right. Also, when it comes to finances, like, I left my job at Wu-Tang to go work for the guy that asked me to sleep with him. But I was doing a great job at Wu-Tang and I enjoyed it. And I really left because I was going to make more money to go work there. And I wish I wouldn't have done that. And that's a lesson that I learned. And I don't know that anybody could tell you that. I think that's something you have to learn on your own, that more money doesn't mean it's a better situation. I would rather have less money and like where I'm at than have more money and hate it.
Yeah, that's especially important right now, because it could be very tempting to go for a job with more money in this economy, right? When especially, like you said, things are so different now, where you can be working your butt off and making no money at all. And that, you know, that could be good for some reasons, but also very, very challenging, especially now, folks, you know, having really high amounts of student loan debt, the cost of living is so high. So also kind of balancing the desire to, you know, have great income with the integrity and the passion of having a job you actually love. I think that's the struggle and the balance everyone is trying to find.
Yeah, I mean, even going to work at Sirius, and when I first started there, I was only making $50,000. And before that, I was making like almost $100,000 doing what I was doing, so doing marketing. And that was like a big step back for me. But it was a sacrifice that you make, because, and that's another thing that I did, is that I asked for a raise in my second year. As soon, like, as that first year was over, I went in and I was like, listen, This first year went really well. I had a great first year working at Sirius. Like, I had a lot of great exclusive interviews, people coming in. Like, I got a lot of attention, and they actually really did give me a raise and a bonus. And I did all this research after that, and I found out, you know, women don't ask for raises nowhere near as often as men do. We don't negotiate our salaries the way that men do. We just kind of take what's given to us.
Right.
And so I learned early on that it's really important to be able to negotiate your salary, to be able to ask for a raise when you deserve it. And I learned how to ask for a raise and all of those things. So that was really beneficial for me. And trust and believe, like, when I was at Sirius, they had just hired Howard Stern right after that. And I was, I think, only two people in the whole company got a raise that year, and I was one of them.
Yes. And it was because you asked for it.
It was because, and not did I only did I ask for it, but I went in like super prepared. Mm-hmm. I came in with all these articles of people that had picked up the interviews or anything that I had done, and just a lot of things that showed why I deserve a raise. Because it's one thing to ask for a raise because we all want one, but it's another thing to ask for a raise because you know you deserve it. Mm-hmm. So you just have to go in prepared to show, why do I deserve a raise? And I also offered, like, if you need me to do other things, I also have the nighttime show, and I never got paid extra for that. So I said, I'm also doing this nighttime show, and I enjoy it, and I love what I'm doing, and it's not that I'm saying I want to leave or go anywhere else. I want to stay here, but I do feel I deserve to make more money, and they agreed.
So while you're doing all these things in radio and the entertainment industry, we didn't even touch on the fact that you've also managed artists, right? You managed Jay Electronica, a bunch of other folks. While you're doing all these things, and in sometimes being one of the only, if not the only woman there, who are you looking up to, right? If you're, it can sometimes feel, I imagine, very isolating, being the only woman in an environment or in your particular space. Who are your mentors, or who are kind of you, did you pull on for inspiration in that journey?
I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't really have any I've never had a mentor, and I wish I would have. Mm-hmm. I had one situation where somebody came to me and said, listen, I know this woman that would be a great mentor for you. And I went with him to the meeting. I thought she wanted to mentor me, but instead she was like, listen, if you pay me this amount of money, I'll help you do whatever, get this together. And I was like, okay, that doesn't sound like a mentorship.
No.
I was like, oh, yeah, I'm good. But yeah, so that didn't work out. But I've never had an official mentor. And as far as people to talk to, I do feel like most of the advice I got was from my own friends who were at the time kind of struggling. That's who I leaned on the most. I had people that, if I had a rough day, at least I knew I had good friends and we all could go out for a drink later. We all were struggling together and going through what we were going through. But I never ever felt like it wasn't going to work out for me. You know, I always felt like I had a lot of backup things that I could be doing if something didn't work out. I even feel like now, if I decide not to do radio, I could do anything else that I want to do, and I'll be okay.
What else would you do if you weren't doing radio at all? I know you talked about writing. Maybe that's it. But what else? Is there anything else that you would do if you just stopped doing radio tomorrow?
Well, you know what? I have my juice bar. I think that I would be a lot more focused, and I want to do a lot more at my juice bar. I do whatever I can. Like, I've been doing events there. But most likely, I am planning to start more businesses that have to do with health and nutrition. Mm-hmm. And so I would probably go full speed on that. I've been working on that on the side now. And if I had more time to dedicate to that, I would. So I probably, if I wasn't doing radio, would just go full steam with that and with the writing. It wouldn't be a bad life.
Nope, not bad. Not bad at all. Owning businesses and writing your books. That sounds pretty perfect, actually.
Right. I'd probably buy a place like in the island somewhere. Ugh. And, you know, maybe open something up on an island. Maybe go back to Montserrat.
And leaving the country in general sounds good right now, but that's a different discussion.
Right, exactly.
But I mean, I think, you know what? There is a link there, because I said leaving the country because of all that's happening politically, socially right now. It's just a very crazy time. And I've noticed—
It sure is.
Since the election, I know on the Breakfast Club, certainly, not even just since the election itself, but even during the campaign, obviously, it was a very contentious time. And so I think you all started getting a bit more overtly political on the show in terms of the types of guests you have on. I know post-election you started to have McGraw Angela Rye on there a bunch. You know, the show has been really supportive of New York Justice League and all these different campaigns. How do you think your work has been impacted, or even just you personally, by the current political climate?
It's made us all a lot more aware. I think we got very comfortable when Barack Obama was president. We were excited. And we got like really hit on our and thrown on our asses when everything happened the way it did after that. But I do feel like it's been really educational because I've never been a political activist. And I always read CNN, I watch CNN, I watch MSNBC, and I pay attention. But I've never been this vocal and this involved. Right. And I feel like a lot of people have been a lot more vocal and involved, you know, as of late. Like I did my book club. We had this book, Run for Something, that Amanda Littman wrote. And it was interesting to me because it's really teaching people how you can run for office. And it just makes you realize a lot of things about who's in office. What about these local offices where you can really make a difference? And why don't we think we can run for office? You know, as a woman, as somebody who is younger, as a person of color, like we need to make sure that we're more active as far as making decisions because we can complain about everything, but it's really important to get out and do something.
Yeah. And do you see the value of your platform any differently? Because like that's so that's you and kind of your own kind of awakening and education. But I know a lot of people who have felt that way and not necessarily then also use their professional platform to kind of share that. Why did you think that was important to do?
You know what's amazing to me? I think people realize how important when they're running for office, how important it is for them to come on The Breakfast Club. They'll call us up and request to be on the show because they know we reach that demographic that they're trying to reach out to. Right. So when that started happening, that's when you realize how people view our show. It's entertainment, but it's also educational and entertainment as well. Yeah. So I think even just like Hillary Clinton wanting to do our show and she did it twice and we interviewed her on her birthday, that was a big deal for us. And, you know, she invited us to that unfortunate night when she lost and we were all at the Jacob Javits and everything with our families thinking it was about to be a celebration. But, you know, even, you know, watching the race in Atlanta and Detroit, you know, in different places, everything with Rory Moore and us, I think sometimes people don't pay enough attention to what's going on, but they might hear about it on The Breakfast Club, and that will make them be more aware also. Like, you might not be paying attention to what's happening, because you know what? Donald Trump's in the news nonstop every day. There's a million different things going on.
Yeah.
And so you might not be paying attention to the fact that the Dreamers might all be sent back home, you know, at the top of the year. Like, just certain laws that are happening, just people, it's things that we just don't necessarily pay attention to, but you might hear a story on The Breakfast Club or hear a guest talk about something, and hopefully that triggers something in you to be more active. Like, I can't stand people who just put hashtags on Twitter and Instagram all the time, but they never do anything in real life. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, you'll be doing a post and they'll do a hashtag, free the slaves in Libya. They probably don't even really know anything about what's going on or how long it's been going on. And so it's important to research things and not just like spew out and copy and hashtag things when you have no idea what's happening.
Right. So my background, that's actually how I know Angela, was I started off before working in media, working in politics. And so I love politics to a certain extent, right? I understand the importance of it. And when I say I love politics, I mean I love the idea of people actually having a say and a stake in their lives and in their communities. But the actual kind of political news and cycle, I can't stand. I really can't stand it. I get sick and tired of hearing the news. My Twitter feed gets overwhelming. And so I actually really appreciate having that type of content mixed in with entertainment, mixed in with pop culture and the things that people, like the regular folks, are just talking about every day. So it's a really important mix.
And like there's like a story on Donald Trump every day. And I have to like pick and choose when I want to report on certain things because it's like just too much.
It's just too much, man.
It's too much.
It really is. Okay, so you talked about your Hillary Clinton interview. What was one of your most surprising interviews that you've done?
Surprising? I mean, I think one of the most surprising ones always would be when we first started the Ray J interview, and that was like in our first year. And he was, I guess, drunk and high, and he called in and, you know, was talking so crazy.
Yeah.
And I didn't anticipate that because, you know, I had just came back from Vegas and I was on my way to work and somebody texted me and said, Ray J just got into a fight with Fab. And I was like, what? And so I went to work and I just kind of mentioned it in the rumor report, you know, because it was a reliable source. And then next thing I know, one of Ray J's, one of the guys that work with him hits me up and is like, hey, Ray J wants to call in and clear this up. I was like, okay, I'm thinking it's just going to be a regular call. Instead, right. He called in going crazy.
Oh my gosh. It was such a classic, classic moment. Any of my listeners, if y'all have not seen that clip, please go look it up when Ray J calls into the Breakfast Club. And it had such a big, it had such an impact on your audience and on kind of the trajectory of the show, right?
Yeah, because it was really early on for us. So that was such a big moment, like when that happened. And I remember Rap Radar, they told me that was their biggest story of the year when they posted that too. You know, for a lot of blogs, that was great. And for people listening, it just the way it happened, because he called in and we're like, okay, we're going to just put him on live because it was the end of the show. And he just started, and we were like, you can't curse. He was like, okay, I won't curse. As soon as we went on, he started cursing. We were like, okay, wait a minute. We're going to come back with some more from Ray J, because then we had to record it and get all the curses out. So it was a big tease for people, because all they heard was him just ranting and cursing.
Right.
And they were like, oh my God. So it gave people a chance to let other people know, like, oh my God, Ray J's about to call in. You got to tune in.
Oh.
And so all of a sudden, everybody's like waiting to hear what's going to happen. And then Twitter's going crazy, you know, just like, oh my God, when is Ray J going to call back in?
Yeah, that was a very, very classic moment for The Breakfast Club. So what's been one of your most uncomfortable interviews? I think, you know, for somebody who does interviews so much, people might assume that they're just all super easy for you and you can do them all with your eyes closed. What's one that's been like the most either uncomfortable or maybe an easier one is difficult? We'll do either one, uncomfortable or difficult.
I mean, I've had plenty of uncomfortable moments, but I think like sometimes things happen and it's confusing. And all right, like definitely the Gucci Mane interview was uncomfortable for me because he just made something up and I was like, I don't know if he's joking, but I also know how the audience is and I know they like to run with whatever is said.
Yeah.
So, and I just actually had a conversation with somebody from his label about that a couple of days ago, because he was like, where did he just get that from? And he was like, you know what? Gucci in his head might really think something like that happened because of the space that he was in back then. Like,
oh, wow.
You know,
for folks who don't know, this was a conversation with Gucci Mane where he implied that Angela Yee had tried to get with him at some point. And it was just a very, very awkward interaction.
And to me, it was so ridiculous because I know myself. Like, and obviously, I know that never happened. I don't even have his number. So, like, and he also said that he did an interview on Lip Service with me and Melissa Ford. And that never happened. Like, he was
really?
On the morning
Wait, that
show.
Interview didn't happen?
No, it never happened. He never was on Lip Service. He was on the morning show, and there was a clip where we were like joking around on the morning show, and he had just came home from jail when we did that. But yeah, and on the video it says the morning after on Shade 45, like all across the clip. So it's nothing on Lip Service, and Melissa Ford wasn't even there. She never met him, never interviewed him.
Yeah.
So he was like, "Yeah, Angela and Melissa Ford." I was like, "It just never happened." So to me, it's funny because like people will still be like, oh, you tried to get with Gucci Mane. And I'm like, OK, the whole thing that he said never even happened. But whatever.
But that's also such a gendered thing, too. Right. That like that anytime you interact with a male guest or, you know, that there's all this kind of rumor and innuendo around it as a woman in the industry. Like, I feel like that happens a lot.
Yeah. And people like that. Like they like to take that. Like I remember Peter Rosenberg on Hot 97 said that I sleep with all my guests after we interview them. And I was like, he said, I sleep with every rapper after we interview them. I'm like, why would you even say something like that? And then he wonders why I have no words for him and like why I don't. You know, I just think that was like a really stupid, irresponsible thing to say. And it's also like impossible.
Yeah.
Nobody has that time.
You just don't have time for that, Angela. Just there's no time.
But, you know, it's easy for me to the only reason why certain things, I think if I was earlier on in my career, things like this might affect me more than they do now. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like I have built this like tough skin where it doesn't really bother me that much because I've already proven myself. So it's not like I'm trying to get to some place I need to get to. I feel like when it comes to radio, it's very clear that I didn't have to compromise myself or, you know, be put in difficult, uncomfortable situations to get to where I got to. I really did it because I worked hard. So it is what it is. Like at iHeart, you know, they're not thinking about any, they're fine with it. And they, you know, they love me at my job. And so there's people that can say whatever they want. But if I was younger and earlier on, this might have affected me so much. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad seeing other people go through things that I know is difficult, that haven't had the experience that I've had and don't have the years under their belt that I have under mine. Mm-hmm. And I do feel bad. Like, I pay attention to when people go in on people, and I know it's like, I think sometimes we're so desensitized, we don't understand that people have real feelings and really like care what people think, because right. social media has made us so insensitive to the fact that these are human beings with feelings. And why do you feel like you can talk to somebody like that on social media and you would never say that to them in person? And you shouldn't.
Right. Okay, so we've talked about your favorite interviews, the stuff that you've done, the stuff that you want to do in the future. I'm curious, how do you, when you go to sleep at night, how do you evaluate your level of success? How do you say, you know what, because of this, I know that I've been successful? And maybe it's, you know, material and professional, maybe it's not, but just what is Angela Yee's metric of success?
Well, I just took my mom to Montserrat for Thanksgiving for a week and rented like this beautiful house on the island and got like a little private, you know, I chartered the plane from Antigua to Montserrat and I did all of that and we did a helicopter ride. It was nice for me to be able to do something like that for my mom that mm-hmm. I never thought, you know, I'd be able to do. And she enjoyed it and appreciated it so much to have my mom sitting in first class. You know, I think things like that mean a lot. Like, I might not have all the time that I would like to spend with my family because I'm always working, but I love the fact that, you know, when I do have some time, I can do really great things. Like, I bought my dad a car. That was a big deal for me. And I paid for it like just outright cash. And he didn't know, because my dad is like the cheapest person on the planet. And every car he's ever had, ever since we were growing up, we've had like the worst, most terrible, most embarrassing cars. And so I bought him a brand new car and he thought he was just going to test drive it. And then, you know, at the end of it all, they were like, here, she bought it for you. And no payments or anything.
That's the dream, you know, to be able to give stuff to your parents.
Right. Because I remember we had a powder blue Duster. We had a yellow Monte Carlo. I used to be like, Dad, drop me off 3 blocks away because you're not pull up in front of school in this car.
Oh, man. So what are you excited about now? What is upcoming for you? Or even just a look at the industry with all the stuff that's happening with women. What excites you about the future?
Man, I love the fact that there's a lot more women who are just getting opportunities in TV and film. I think that's amazing. Like, looking at people like Shonda Rhimes and Ava DuVernay, and just seeing that is exciting to me. I love that there's all these outlets too, like with Netflix, with Hulu, with Amazon, all these different ways that you can consume television, so that it's no longer just like having to be on VH1 or having to be on network TV. I love the fact that people are doing all these, I love comedy. So mm-hmm. I love the fact that people are doing all these comedy specials, just that we have so many options and to see so many different colors and different people represented on television that we didn't used to see before. Mm-hmm. I think that's amazing. And that people are getting the opportunities, not having to have, you know, Hollywood behind them, but mm-hmm. they can do things independently. And mm-hmm. it's not as expensive. Before, you couldn't do something because you needed film and you needed this and that, and it was so expensive. Now you get a camera and a laptop and you can shoot something and it could potentially end up on Netflix.
Right, right. Know? It's an amazing time to be alive and to be a creator and to be in a place where you're making things that you want other people to see. Like, it's just a really great time for that.
Yeah, but it also means you have to stand out. So there's a lot of people out there with talent, and those people that have true, true talent, those are the ones that'll stand out. I think, you know, it just helps us out a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So last question for you. What would you tell a young woman, let's say 25-ish, who has decided that she wants to be in an industry that is male-dominated, and frankly, that could be the majority of industries. That's a lot right. of industries right
it's
now,
like
right?
every industry, except maybe teaching.
Pretty much. Exactly.
Or nurse.
almost every other industry where the power structures are dominated by men. What one piece of advice would you give her?
I would say to understand that you are going to have to work harder than everybody, because I've always had to work harder than everybody, but that actually turned out to be beneficial to me, because even to this day, I still do all my own research. I still do a lot of things on my own, but it's made me better at what I do. So know that you'll have to work so much harder, and to make sure that you network. I think networking is so important. Like, sometimes all we do is go to work and come home, and you need to get out there and make sure people know who you are, make sure you you know, build up a rapport with people so that when opportunities come up, a lot of things have happened for me because people are familiar with me. They know me. They know my work ethic, but they see me out and about. And people like that. People like to feel like, okay, I just saw Angela last night and I was thinking about this opportunity. I'm going to just talk to her about it because I think she'll be good. And I just ran into her. So you just got to stay on the top of people's minds. Make sure you get out there and do what you have to do. Even if right now you're not making a lot of money or you have no money, you have to figure it out because we all started somewhere. So later on in life, you'll look back and be like, wow, it's amazing, you know, how I got to where I got to.
Yeah, I just saw a quote somebody posted on Facebook the other day. I may not be exactly where I want, but thank God I'm not where I was.
Right. And, you know, it's hard because I feel like a lot of us aren't as patient as we need to be. It doesn't happen that quickly. You have to really, really be patient with yourself and really understand that you have to work so hard. And one more thing I would say is whatever you do, don't talk shit about people behind their back because it always gets back to them. If you don't have something positive to say, just keep it down. Don't say anything because a lot of times we talk about each other. We say negative things about people. We text things we shouldn't text and they pop up on social media or somebody will tell someone, oh, well, this person said this about you. And you don't want to have that happen to you. Just keep it positive and that positive energy will come back to you. When you start saying negative things, that you'll never know how that could affect you later on. It'll affect you.
Well, Angela, thank you for all of your positive energy this morning.
Thank you, Erica. I can't wait to read your book.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I can't wait for everyone to hear this conversation. It was so much fun. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to Angela for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to chat with us on the call. Thanks to our producer, Melody Rowell, the entire Man Repeller team, Kate and Amelia and Erica Smith and Leandra. And most importantly, thanks to all of you. Every single week I tell y'all, reach out to me, hit me on Instagram, on Twitter, or send me an email. And every time you do, I legitimately read what you've sent. Last week I got a note from a woman named Zara. And in her email, she said that she listens to the show every week. And afterwards, she skips back to tell her roommate, her friends, her family, I'm quoting her now, the random checkout clerk at the grocery, to fill them in on all the crazy cool things some incredible, inspiring woman has said about their life experiences and hardships and trials and how they manage to stay true to themselves all the while. She goes on to say that she's got her mom even listening to the show. And then this was my favorite part. She says, I find something so relatable whenever I tune in, whether it's with you or the women you're interviewing. It's like catching up with friends. And usually your friends, the people you choose to surround yourself with, are the best people. So thanks for choosing such amazing ones for me and for so many women out there. Well, Zara, you're my friend now. Thank you for listening to the show. But you hit the nail on the head. This show is really about women and how we surround ourselves with people who can inspire us and push us forward to reach our dreams and to change so many things that need to be changed, not just in our personal lives, but in the world around us, the world that we share. So thank y'all so much for all of your feedback and for listening to every single episode of The Call. Season 3 is going to be even better. I promise you that. I can't wait. I'm so excited. So make sure you come back. It'll be in a couple weeks. We'll put out a trailer like always and stay tuned. Make sure you're subscribed and keep spreading the word. Go back and listen to the old episodes. I do that sometimes. They still inspire me. Anyway, hit me up on Instagram at Miss E. Will, on Twitter at Created by Erica. I love y'all. Peace. Keep answering your call.